climate time bomb is ticking. But today's IPCC report is a how-to guide to defuse the climate time bomb. It is a survival guide for humanity. As it shows, the 1.5 degree limit is achievable. But it will take a quantum leap in climate action. This report is a clarion call to massively fast-track climate efforts by every country and every sector and on every time frame.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres talking about the new UN climate report in the most definitive report released by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. This report warns that we are nearing catastrophic levels of global warming and irreversible damage within the next decade. It also says there's still time to avoid it, but to do so, the world needs to collectively cut emissions in half by 2030. So in less than 7 years. Joining me now to talk about whether that's possible is Edward Parson, environmental law professor and faculty director of the UCLA Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment. Hi, Ted.
Hi, Madeline.
All right. So they whittled down all of this data into 30 odd pages. What are the key takeaways?
Well, it's hard to find key takeaways because the language has a lot of complexity and ambiguity. And I was actually a little astonished at the quote from the clip from the Secretary General that you led just a moment ago, saying we have one last chance to avoid 1.5C, 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit heating above pre-industrial levels. That's the first of the two politically agreed targets in the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. And is often identified as a threshold of very severe damages from climate change. Because my reading of the report is that it actually says the world will pass 1.5C probably within about 10 years. And
if we do, whether we do anything or not, it's just baked in?
Yeah, pretty much. It's, you know, it's a... the lags and momentum of the system are huge. It's steering a super tanker. So you can mm-hmm. Pull as hard as you want on the rudder and it takes a long time to turn. So the UN body that issued this report is very careful not to make categorical statements, certainly in their headline statements. But in fact, if you read the text even of the 30-page summary for policymakers, which is what was released in the middle of the night here, you know, in West Coast time, it pretty much says the world will pass 1.5C, which is the first of the Paris targets. That's 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit global average heating over pre-industrial levels. And the stakes are all in how far we go beyond that. I mean, there's huge priority on intensive efforts to cut emissions as soon as possible. In my view, and in my reading of this report, it doesn't say that that will suffice to keep the world below 1.5C, but that doesn't mean it's not an imperative to do it. It's 1.5C isn't a cliff beyond mm-hmm. which all is lost and we all just, you know, curl up in fetal position and gather with our loved ones and wait to die.
Yeah.
1.5 is a politically demarcated boundary beyond which things get worse and worse and worse incrementally, especially for the most vulnerable people and regions of the world. So
we're already seeing that though right now. As we speak, yet another atmospheric river is on the way here in California. So aren't we already seeing the results?
You are so right. I mean, so when I say 1.5C, I keep talking in Celsius and of course, I should say 2.7F. It's not that everything's fine up until that and then we basically fall off a cliff into hell beyond that. It's that things are getting worse and worse and worse in a progressive incremental way up until that point, and they keep getting worse beyond that. So yeah, the disruptions, the crazy weather in the winters, the crazy fire seasons, the extended droughts, the most recent example that you'd think would have really hammered home just how bad things might be are the floods in Pakistan last mm-hmm. monsoon season.
Which really weather. Highlights the biggest problem here is, as you mentioned, that vulnerable people, the poor people of the world, are most at risk.
Yes, absolutely. So it's not that rich people in rich countries are not at risk. Everyone's at risk, but always the vulnerabilities are greatest for the most mm-hmm. disadvantaged people. Which, in the climate change context, that mostly means low latitude, low elevation, low income countries. So small islands and coastal regions. Yep.
Right.
Go ahead.
One of the results of all of this that they're saying is likely now is no more Arctic sea ice in the summertime.
There's still a lot of controversy over how fast that will happen. If it keeps getting hotter, then it's essentially assured that there will be no more Arctic sea ice in the summer. It's greatly reduced already. There's still a range of projections of how fast it will continue to disappear. And that's something that is likely to have really severe kind of worldwide disruptions as a consequence.
What does that look like? For example, here in the United States, on the coast of California, on the East Coast, along the southern coasts, what does it look like?
So here you're moving a little beyond my expertise, because and I want to say there's actually a fair amount of controversy over specific regional consequences of climate change. So the reason people often talk in sort of general terms the way I'm now, it's like, you know, things are going to get worse in general, more extremes, hot, actually even cold in some instances as well, wet and dry, interacting effects, is that the further you go down the chain of consequences toward projecting, you know, what will this mean for Los Angeles storms in the winter, the more uncertainties get thrown in. So it's kind of a hard message to convey the degree of alarm, because you don't know specifically what's going to happen.
Right.
So yeah, in terms of Arctic sea ice, it's Arctic sea ice is crucial for the worldwide circulation of ocean currents. So it has very, very long distance dynamical effects in weather and climate worldwide.
I guess the problem with releasing these reports every so often and of holding these conferences every so often is that it does become abstract for the average person. The weather is obviously not abstract. We're dealing with it every day. But what is happening on the more on the higher levels with governments? How are they responding to these reports? And I mean, we just saw President Biden approve a massive oil drilling program in Alaska. So how are governments reacting to this dire news from the UN?
So there's a wide range of how different governments are reacting. Some are on a kind of a five alarm fire, and some are much less. The United States, in the Biden administration, has actually done pretty well relative to all the constraints they're operating under, with the massive turn to huge investment and subsidy programs under recent the Infrastructure and the Inflation Reduction Act. They're taking an approach of basically subsidizing the good new stuff we need to move to, as opposed to regulating and suppressing the bad old stuff we need to move away from.
Is that going to work? Is that enough?
You know, what's enough? It's not going to hold us below 1.5 C, but at this point, there's probably nothing that could be done that would hold us below 1.5 C. It's absolutely imperative to, you know, steer the ship as fast as possible. At this point, I mean, the IPCC didn't quite say it in this report, but a number of recent reports have said it. Basically, investment in new infrastructure for the production, processing, and distribution of fossil fuels, oil and gas and coal, basically has to stop, because that tap has to be turned off. There's actually already more production infrastructure in these fuels than can be fully used and stay within the 1.5 or even the 2-degree Paris targets. So I very much wish the Biden administration was more aggressive in going after current sources of emissions, rather than just subsidizing the new energy systems we need.
Okay.
But what they're doing is actually, it's a lot better than we've had.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, my pleasure, bye-bye.
That's Edward Parson, environmental law professor and faculty director of the UCLA Emmett Institute.